Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. He is also the author of The Weed Agency, a comic tale of federal bureaucracy without limits. And today is publication date. So if you haven't pre-ordered your copy, get on it now. Now you can just order it. You don't have to pre-order it. And it's also going to be available in your brick-and-mortar bookstores. So, Jim, congratulations. The Weed Agency is our good martini today. Anytime you write a book, it's a monstrous undertaking, and finishing it is something to be commended. I am in the process of reading it. It is a fantastic book, in some ways depressing, but it's very it's very entertaining. And essentially, it kind of walks us through the last 35 years or so of the government here in Washington from just before the victory of Reagan. And you get to meet all these different people coming to Washington with different ideas of how to streamline government, change things, cut spending. And then you also meet the bureaucrats who never leave and make sure that the spending not only doesn't drop, but actually increases. And how they get that done is pretty amazing and very realistic. Some of the characters from administration to administration are fictional here, but what they run into is very, very real.
Fake but accurate is my slogan, much like the Dan Rather's explanation for his memos about Bush. Greg, thank you so much for the kind words. It has been a long time coming, probably about 2 or 3 years working on this through process of edits and all that stuff. I feel very blessed to have the opportunity to write something kind of in the style and voice that I've wanted to. Undoubtedly, these topics can be very frustrating and depressing. As I said in the morning jolt today, anybody who says, I'm really not interested in reading a book about the budget process, federal spending, and how bureaucrats work, I can get that. I can understand that. What I try to do is, you know, to make the people come alive. People are interesting, even if lines on a budgetary statement aren't all that interesting. Hopefully it's a fun and funny way of looking at the topic. And, you know, you laugh because otherwise you'd have to cry. Very interesting news right before we came on the air. You encourage everyone to go to Amazon or other places. Apparently, Amazon has sold out, which is a nice problem for an author to have, but you hate to see people saying it's going to take a while for it to arrive. My understanding from the publisher is more copies have been sent. They should be arriving in Amazon in the next day or two, and a delivery should be a matter of days, not weeks, as the warning currently says. So everyone who's – all the Three Martini Lunch listeners who have ordered the book, thank you so much. I feel honored to have your – $13 at the bookstore, $7.99 on Kindle, and anything in between. And I'm just a very blessed guy to be in the situation that I am. So thanks to everybody.
Oh, absolutely. What's the main takeaway you want folks to get from the book?
We on the right kind of sometimes underestimate the difficulty of trimming the government, and that there really is this kind of permanent bureaucracy that presidents come and go, cabinet secretaries come and go. People who go to work for the government, you know, most of them intend on spending their whole careers there. So they're going to be there for 40 years. So you can outweigh a lot of people's reform plans and a lot of these pushes for change just by dragging your feet and delaying things. And that's kind of what's happened. And, you know, one of the more intriguing kind of aspects of this is that we've seen during the Obama administration that our Democratic friends have found a lot of their highfalutin and idealistic ideas largely stymied or nearly derailed by the inefficiencies and culture of complacency, as I call it, within the federal bureaucracy. Barack Obama really thought the Department of Health and Human Services would have a website up and running on the deadline. Surprise, it didn't. Sometimes you have something utterly appalling, having rather lavish conferences that just happen to align perfectly with major other events on the calendar that tourists like to go to.
Yeah.
You can kind of laugh at it. There are good people who go to work for the government. They go there, they want to help their country, they have a certain amount of idealism. But as I said, this culture of complacency and the entire management and the entire attitude of how these people go about their jobs usually stamps that idealism out of them bit by bit, year by year. It assimilates them into the collective, to use a term that Star Trek fans would understand. There's a great deal of frustration out there because I think there are some people who work for the federal government who want to have pride in their jobs, who want to say, hey, I'm helping make this country a better place. It's not working that way. You know, we can't have the Minerals Management Service partying with the industry they're supposed to be overseeing. You know, the unprofessionalism of the wandering hands of TSA agents. I mean, you know, most people's interactions with the government are way too often disappointing. And it kind of comes from this, you know, general lack of professionalism and, you know, the fact that it's not a competition. Even state governments have competition with each other. You know, if you're a lousy enough government, say California, people will move to Texas and to places where they feel like they're getting more for their money and getting a better deal. The federal government doesn't have that competition other than the folks who are putting their money into gold and moving to Belize and stuff like that. And that's, you know, I think for most Americans, just not an option and something they want to do. So I'm really hoping that these, you know, we can kind of like draw a certain alliance with some folks on the other side of the aisle to say, look, nothing's going to get done in this country until we have a completely different mentality and culture and standard of professionalism and standard of efficiency within the federal government. And it's just not something that folks in Capitol Hill can kind of, you know, turn a blind eye to anymore.
Once again, it's the Weed Agency, a comic tale of federal bureaucracy without limits. On to the Bad Martini now. And we spent all of the Three Martini Lunch yesterday on the Bo Bergdahl situation, the president's decision to get him back in exchange for five hardened Taliban figures being held at Guantanamo Bay without the 30-day consultation with Congress. The president is now over in Europe at his first joint press conference in Poland, and he was asked about his rationale for releasing Bergdahl in exchange for the Taliban figures and whether or not we just became less safe as a result of this. Here's what he had to say.
We still get an American soldier back if he's held in captivity, period, full stop. We don't condition that. Is there the possibility of some of them trying to return to activities that are detrimental to us? Absolutely. That's been true of all the prisoners that were released from Guantanamo. There's a certain recidivism rate that takes place. I wouldn't be doing it if I thought that it was contrary to American national security. And we have confidence that we will be in a position to go after them if, in fact, they are engaging in activities that threaten our defenses. This is what happens at the end of wars. That's been true of every combat situation, that at some point you make sure that you try to get your folks back. And that's the right thing to do.
First of all, it's hard to tell whether these people are a threat or they're not a threat. Secondly, in the very beginning, he seems to say there's no conditions for getting folks back, which I'm sure would make the Taliban pretty pleased. And there doesn't seem to be any moral wrestling over the law that was still on the books about the 30-day review.
Yesterday, we had talked about the good aspects, the bad aspects, and the crazy aspects of this deal. As this progresses, this is looking more bad and more crazy as time goes by. No one is saying we shouldn't take him back, right? There's nobody who's saying that if he walked back to U.S. lines, we'd throw him back towards the Taliban or anything like that. The question is, at what price? If the Taliban said, we'll give you this guy back in exchange for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I'd like to think almost everyone would say, no, we're not willing to accept that. If they said, well, kill 10 kids and we'll give you your guy back. You know, there is such a thing as too high a price to pay. And I think that there's a lot of people saying putting five who are apparently, you know, battle-hardened, high-level commanders, that is a high price for us to pay. And it's one thing if you're bringing back somebody who you conceive to be kind of this iconic American hero. Look, a lot of very serious concerns are being raised about Bergdahl. And if he did, you know, as I think the comment that just kind of jumps out and kind of cuts through so much of the haze came on the interview that Jake Tapper did on CNN with Josh Korder, who had served with Bergdahl, where he says, look, he is at best a deserter and at worst a traitor. That's a very steep price to pay. And now you throw in the latest revelation, which is, you know, it's floating around. The Pentagon says they can't confirm it. But the idea that these search operations for Bergdahl after he disappeared ended up killing five U.S. soldiers. So here's, you know, so we've lost six heroes and we're giving away five guys that a lot of blood and effort was spent trying to capture in exchange for one guy who wandered away from his post. Susan Rice, once again this weekend, lying through her teeth, saying he was nabbed on the battle lines and that he served with distinction and honor. How many times can Susan Rice go on a Sunday show and lie blatantly about something important to national security? I think she's going to set some sort of personal record for that. This is obviously, you know, heart-wrenching to the families of those six guys who died, saying, wait a minute, you know, my son died to help bring back a deserter, you know, like that sacrifice was for that. The Taliban claims, and we obviously take everything they say with a certain grain of salt, but they said that Bergdahl was helping them, which is very disturbing if true. From the very beginning, this administration has not been honest about this circumstance. So you said they didn't, you know, brief Congress as they are legally obligated to. And so just this pattern of duplicitous, dishonest behavior in the administration, not being honest about the costs, not being honest about the consequences. And that statement you just played from President Obama, sometimes he just contradicts himself from statement to statement, where he says, yes, there's absolutely a risk these guys will go out and try to kill Americans again, but he decided it's in our national interest for this to happen. What? Mr. President, do you listen to yourself when you say these things?
We desperately need a lighthearted crazy martini. And thankfully, we have that today, thanks to supposedly serious researchers. This is from the National Journal, but this story was all over the place yesterday. University of Illinois researchers tracked the death tolls for every hurricane that touched down on U.S. soil between 1950 and 2012, leaving out Hurricane Katrina and one others because their death tolls were so much deadlier than usual. They found that the more feminine the storm's name, the higher its death toll, a lot higher. Their analysis suggests that changing a hurricane's name from Charlie to Eloise could nearly triple the storm's fatalities. The effect held for storms before 1979, which were only given female names. Here's the quote from Sharon Shabbat, who co-authored the study. In judging the intensity of a storm, people appear to be applying their beliefs about how men and women behave. This makes a female-named hurricane, especially one with a very feminine name, such as Belle or Cindy, seem gentler and less violent. This means that people take fewer precautions as these hurricanes approach, which leaves them more vulnerable once they hit. People imagining a female hurricane were not as willing to seek shelter. Jim?
I'm sure in her corner of academia, this was seen as some brilliant insight and indication of latent sexism in people's minds or something. I don't know about you, Greg. Obviously, we remember that, you know, nobody took Hurricane Sandy seriously, right? You know, that's a chick hurricane. It's not going to hurt anybody. Come on. It's a little girly hurricane. I have a hard time buying into this theory. And over here by a gentleman named WMBriggs.com, kind of looked at the National Weather Service's numbers and said, you know, because in the study it says, estimates suggest that hurricanes kill more than 200 people in the United States annually, and severe hurricanes can cause fatalities in the thousands. You look at it like, wow, 200 people a year? And the reason that sounds really unbelievable is because it's not. Because in 2006, there were zero fatalities. In 2007, one. 2008, 12. 2009, two. 2010, zero. 2011, nine. 2012, three. 2013, one. All right? So he goes through the numbers. He says since 1940, only 4 years out of 74 had hurricanes that killed more than 200, which, as you recall, is the number they're saying is the average. They're just flat out wrong on that. And it says now the 10-year average is 108 deaths, but the 30-year average is 47. And the big reason is that Hurricane Katrina, which I think everyone would say is the most devastating hurricane we in recent memory, that killed 1,106 people. Now, that's obvious. That's a heck of a lot of people to die. It's awful. It's horrible. But remember, they said severe hurricanes can cause fatalities in the thousands, plural. I don't know if we have to go back really hard, really far to find any hurricane that killed more than 2,000 people. Basically, a lot of the data in this is extremely suspect. It completely contradicts what the National Weather Service has, and it sounds like a bit of wish casting, basically wanting there to be all kinds of people dying terrible deaths because of their inherent Latin sexism and not taking female-named hurricanes seriously. So good, powerful lesson that if it sounds too silly to be true, it probably is, except if you're reading the Weed Agency, because I put footnotes to indicate everything that's based in fact.
Yes, exactly. As Jim mentioned, there is crazy details like this in the Weed Agency, a comic tale of federal bureaucracy without limits. Congratulations again, Jim. Everybody pick up a copy.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, listeners.
He's Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.